views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello and welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and it's a delight to be joining you for a new month and a new topic. But before that, my delightful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve.
How are you?
Just fine. Looking forward to this month.
Me too. So shall I introduce the month?
Yes, please.
Wonderful. So listeners, you know, every month we take on a new subject, a new aspect of the spiritual path, and we dive deep. We explore every angle. We have covered right action. We've covered humanity as a whole. We've done harmlessness, hope. We've had really intriguing discussions about topics that help you integrate the spiritual life and awareness into your everyday life. So the month of September, we're going to talk about discernment. And goodness gracious, could it not be more apropos? Well, it's always apropos, but it seems like these days this we need so desperately as a humanity to develop this quality of discernment. We are faced with fake news. You know, this has been such a subject that we've all had to sort of deal with, this idea of what is truth and what is false, and discerning where harm is being done and where harm is not being done. We've talked about that quite a bit, and there are so many subtleties involved there. So discernment is the topic of the month, and I look so forward to it. Dorothy, anything you'd like to add about discernment?
Well, I think it's, I too am really excited about talking about it this month, because it's really, you know, we talk about being able to discriminate, using that in the neutral term, not the negative term, be able to discriminate between different perspectives, different issues, but discernment adds that element of evaluation. Mm. So it's not just, you know, what's A and what's B, but what are the implications?
Yes.
What is it that really is critical? And I'd like to give a quote to start us off, Steve. This is from the Dalai Lama. We must use discernment continuously to guarantee our proper motivation.
Mm, nice. What do you take from that?
Well, I think it, you know, when we talk about why we do something, which is our motivation, it needs to be based on accuracy and also on appropriate values. And discernment is what helps us make sure that we are perceiving accurately, and that we are making the appropriate value judgment.
I appreciate the word.
That's what I take from it.
I appreciate the word continuously in there, in that that is life, correct? I mean, we are constantly making choices. We are constantly evaluating what next, or what is my response to what I've been presented with. And that really is so much of the spiritual path, which is, comes down to, am I part of the solution or am I part of the problem? We hear that quite a mm-hmm. bit these days. And for me, mm-hmm. that is really the word continuously, you know, is a beautiful aspect of that quote, that it doesn't end. We really are in a process of choice here, you know, as in the human experience, right?
Right. And I think it also reflects the shift that humanity is going through and needs to go through from the more emotional, you know, for people that are into the rays, the more emotional sixth ray to the seventh ray focus, because it's about not just kind of feeling good, you know, as a, in terms of one's spirituality, but actually distinguishing and recognizing the moral implications of situations and taking careful action.
Yes, and careful, goodness, careful distinctions, you know, this discernment, it's always about distinctions. And, you know, that you mentioned the rays and people that understand the rays, that is such a process of discernment. You know, what are the different qualities or expressions of energy or expressions of humanity, and how do we process them? How do we understand their motivations and their results, you know? So it's going to be a fascinating month. I really look forward to it. So,
and
go on.
Well, I was just going to say that there's been a lot in the news that raises issues around values and around prejudice and how it plays out. And discernment is absolutely critical to our ability to identify and root out that prejudice.
Yes.
So
yes.
It seems particularly relevant.
Well, and for listeners, I just wanted to let them know that I have wanted to talk about the riddle scale, if it's not too soon to go into that, but I'm so excited, and I know we have a lot to cover with that. But, you know, listeners, Dorothy has been a force, really, behind helping not only people but organizations discern areas in which discrimination or bias, even cultural bias that people may not even be aware of, has developed what is called the riddle scale. So we're so blessed, Dorothy, to have you as the co-host, that we can talk about this. The riddle scale was developed to at first analyze homophobia, but then it was expanded. It has been expanded and used, to analyze areas where there may be bias or prejudice in the workplace in so many different capacities. So, by looking at this scale, we really get to understand. We get to discern ourselves, but understand your process even of what it means to create a system that is all about discernment. So we're going to take two shows to talk about the riddle scale, and I'm so excited.
Me too, Steve. And for our listeners, the scale and its background is actually described on Wikipedia if you want to look up the riddle scale there. But I did develop it initially in the 1970s. For work on homophobia. I was working in Arizona, and there were a number of community issues that came up, and both faith communities and also the sheriff's department asked me for some help in terms of providing training to officers or providing training to community members, and that's what got me thinking about, okay, how do we differentiate in a fine-grained form the different aspects of homophobia or any type of prejudice? Because if we just see it as a whole, it's difficult to work on. And so I'd like to just dive in on that, if I could, Steve.
Sure. Please do.
Okay. So the scale itself has four levels of negative attitudes and four levels of what might be seen more as positive attitudes. So let's spend this week on the negative, and then next week we can get into the more positive. Is that okay with you?
That sounds perfect.
Okay. So the first category in the scale is I called repulsion, and this is that feeling that homosexuality is a crime against nature, that gays and lesbians are sick, crazy, immoral, sinful, wicked, almost
degenerate.
Less than human.
Yes.
Degenerate, exactly, yeah. There are a lot of adjectives that are used, and a lot of the name-calling that occurs is pulling on this dynamic, right? And what's interesting is that this dynamic, along with other forms of bigotry, had gone underground for a while. I mean, researchers showed very clearly that the kind of overt bigotry had not disappeared in the U.S., but it was, you know, people were more attached to, quote, politically correct language, and so they would talk as though this wasn't an issue. But under our current president, this is no longer the case. This is, you know, everybody's come out in the open, and we see this very, very overtly. We saw this in Charlottesville. We see it in the Heritage Foundation has a study. It's current on their website, saying that Latinos or Hispanics have a lower IQ or kind of subhuman, and it's not clear that they would ever become fully human like whites, which is one of the issues that is coming up in the whole debate around immigration and DACA. We have the KKK marching openly. We have Trump's father having marched in the 20s in full KKK regalia and been arrested at that point. So we have a link to current days.
If I might just jump in, yep. Because you know, for the listeners, you know, you made a bridge very quickly from talking about this repulsion in terms of homosexuality, and we can all see how very clearly it moves into race relations, and we also see repulsion in terms of religious, you know, religion and religious background. So, you know, just very clearly as we go through all these. We're certainly not only talking about homosexuality, but because that was the basis of the Riddle Scale, we can really extend this to all sorts of discrimination and prejudice. So, you know, it's very au courant, right? So, Dorothy, break. So when we come back, I'd also like to hear about from your where you came up, for instance, with the word repulsion, and if it took some time to get these specific words fine-tuned so they had the right vibration. But we're going to go to a break, and when we get back, more on this just very intriguing subject. We'll be back in a moment.
In this day and age, if you don't reinvent yourself, you may never find balance, peace, and the sustainable life that is your birthright. Angela Watson Robertson, known as the Reinvention Warrior and the host of breakthrough radio show Masters of Reinvention, is here to help you reinvent every area of your life. Tune in and hear from the best in the personal transformation business and discover tips and tools for positive change. Live every month on Transformation Talk Radio.
Hey, did you know why they call the foundation the foundation? It's called the foundation because it completely eliminates your foundation for what you thought your reality was and creates a whole new space where you can have an entirely new reality that is foundationless. So from my point of view, they should call it the unfoundation or the foundationlessness. Either way, there's a big new global rewrite happening again because these guys cannot stop changing. There should be like a Change Anonymous that Gary and Dane go to. And it's happening April 28th to May 1st. You can find out about it at accessconsciousness.com/global foundation. It's happening in Paris. Go to Paris or do it online or find a pod near you. These are all the options you have. And what else is possible?
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters N-R-G.com. Discover the healing medicine from the giant monkey tree frog Cambo. Cambo practitioner Ginny Rutherford and professional psychic Todd Rolson have come together for lively discussions of alternative healing medicines from the Amazon. Ginny and Todd bring you Cambo Talk Radio. Tune in each Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific to hear from guests all over the world with real life stories and the medicinal benefits of Cambo. For more information, visit CamboKiss.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio, where we are talking about discernment. We will spend the entire month of September talking about discernment. But in that I said the word we, it's Dr. Dorothy Riddle and I. And, you know, Dorothy, we are so blessed to have you for these shows and for every show. The level of at which you are able to discern, your capacity for discernment always just is such a blessing to this show. And I personally learned so much. But, you know, our organizations, this Spirit Fire Radio itself, this season is a collaboration. And it's in part because you were able to discern that a lot of esoteric organizations were actually in their own way, though you would think these spiritual, a lot of spiritual organizations, spiritual nonprofits would be working together beautifully, but there was actually a gap in a way in which they just were almost at heads with each other. And you were able to discern that and put into motion this intention to collaborate with other, other educational nonprofits, other spiritual and esoteric organizations. And as a result, we're working together. So there again is another instance where you have sort of set that in motion, this idea of discerning, discerning the issue and saying, well, let's work to counteract that for a better world. And so here we are at Spirit Fire Radio. So tell us a little bit about the School for Esoteric Studies.
That's very nicely put, Steve. Thank you. Yes, I'm with the School for Esoteric Studies. You can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. And our mission is to provide esoteric discipleship training to persons who have a spiritual practice and want to deepen that and deepen their ability to be a world server. And we do that through study, through meditation, and through service. And again, you can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. And if you are associated with an organization that would also like to collaborate, we have a whole section on the website on intergroup collaboration. And we're very, very pleased to be doing this collaboration with Spirit Fire.
Yes, and what a beautiful website, schoolforesotericstudies.net. Yes, so much wonderful, valuable information, and we are pleased as well. So my half of this collaborative piece is Spirit Fire, and we are an educational nonprofit, and we too are intent upon our focus on meditation study and service. We do that through our own meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness, and we have a retreat center in Western Massachusetts where we hold retreats and teach classes on spirituality and consciousness online. You can check us out at spiritfire.com. So, Dorothy, let's move on. Let's go back to this subject. It's a little bit hard to go from that good feeling, right, to the word repulsion. I just couldn't say it. But you know, we've got to look at this, correct? I mean, this is it's really a part of our world. And so, I'm curious about the word, though. Do you mind if we just spend a minute on how you
found
these words?
I'm happy to. Yeah. So for listeners, my original training is as a clinical psychologist, although I've worked also in economic development and in the business world. But when I was working on this, I was drawing both on my psychological background, but also on my spiritual meditative work. And I, in coming up with the categories and the labels for them, the best way I can describe them was that it had to do with the energetic feel that I had when I was in the presence of the expression of that particular attitude. Because the eight that we're going to talk about, I have experienced all of those. And so with repulsion, although, you know, some people have better control over their facial muscles, I've actually been with people who in talking to me, it's like they grimace in that way. You know, when you're repulsed by something, you can see it. You know, the cords of their neck get stiff, and it's almost impossible for them to not take a step back or lean back, you know, try to get out of your physical space. It's a very physical reaction.
And was it something physical that brought that on for them, do you feel? I mean, was it something that they, what were they interpreting as repulsive? So awful to
that I was somehow evil. They were in the presence of evil, you know, that I was wicked, I was sinful. Part of that, like there's psychological studies, you don't see it as clearly in humans because humans learn to control their behavior. But with chimpanzees, for example, or if you see films of the integration of schools that was happening, you know, and you see the crowds and you see their faces and those grimaces, those repulsive looks. So that's the feeling tone that I wanted to reflect in this first level of attitude.
Right. I guess what I was getting at, Dorothy, was it that perhaps somebody saw you holding hands with somebody of the same gender, and that was what was repulsive to them, or not to get too personal or too sort of in that.
I just wonder
because there's really is a difference, especially you talk about humans' capacity to sort of to cover up their emotions. Well, homosexuals in their own way, you know, could in a sense cover up their homosexuality, which is a problem in and of itself. Whereas if we think about the integrating of schools, you know, there's no hiding your black skin. That's right.
At that point in my life, I was encountering this because I told people, or somebody else told somebody, that I was a lesbian, not because they observed me being physically affectionate.
Wow. So
with somebody.
It goes even deeper then, right? It's so entrenched.
Absolutely. And I think it's really important for anyone that's working in this area or thinking about it to remember the very early research that that demonstrated that homophobia is not about sexuality. It's about the violation of sex roles.
Mm.
It's about feeling that, and that's part of where the repulsion comes from. And it is, unfortunately, in our society, I believe, a bit stronger towards men than towards women. I mean, people don't like women not behaving like traditional women, but they really don't like the idea of men not behaving as the traditional macho male.
Yes, indeed. So repulsion, could, you know, how would we discern, right, that someone is actually repulsed by another? What?
Well, partly it comes out in the beliefs that are stated. We have a very recent one. I just saw it online in this last week. There's a Nashville statement that's been made by the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood that says that it's sinful to be gay and it is sinful to approve of anyone who is gay.
Wow.
So, you know, which is, you know, very dramatic. And then if we go to another issue, we have the white nationalists and the statements that they make about Jews, not just about people of other ethnic groups or other sexual orientations. So the main, I think my own experience of this is that you're simply not visible to the other person as an individual. You're in a category, and anything is justified in order to change you. This is where you get the shock therapy, you get the prison systems, you know, the brutality that is played out under this justification is horrific.
Right. Horror is an aspect of this. You know, when we're repulsed by something, right, we want it out of our way.
Right.
We want it out of our sight. We want it out of our, not only our life, but we want it finished and done. You know, and when mm-hmm. you think about discrimination against Jews, I mean, that was, you know, that was the illusion, right, that was brought
right.
forward of this idea of vermin and of in America, which was, you know, we put animals to work. So, you know, the blacks are closer to animals than us. And so we put them to work in the same way that we would, you know, a cow or a horse, and we own them just the same. And these horrible illusions, and then they're expendable. So then that's where, if you're willing to sort of electroshock somebody, you know, if you're willing to give them electroshock therapy or put them in prison, you know, they're not even human to you. And that's where we see this violence. I think of lynchings and the Jim Crow era, where, you know, it was, can you imagine walking down the street and there's a human being hanging from a tree, and the hardening of your heart to be able to walk past that and not take this body down to show respect, or even to be able to do that, to be able to live with that in your vicinity, and then to be a black and have to see that and have to live amongst that is just, it's shocking and unimaginable to me.
Well, I went to graduate school at Duke in North Carolina, and while I was there, the KKK was very active, and cross burnings and lynchings were not unheard of.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying. That to observe humans in a state where they can feel that way towards other human beings.
Yes. Not pretty in any way. I mean, that's just making so light of it. To say those words is horrifying. I mean, it is actually horrifying.
No.
So repulsion, you know, it really is, in this sense, it is teamed really with harm and brutality. right? And often right. violent, I would say. So we're really at the bottom of the scale here.
That's right. And interestingly enough, or not, I mean, it's distressing. The United States was issued an early warning by the United Nations because of what happened in Charlottesville and President Trump's refused to immediately denounce it.
Yes, to acknowledge
And the
it.
UN has asked U.S. authorities to undertake concrete measures to address the root causes of the proliferation of such racist manifestations. That's a direct quote from the warning that was issued. Now, I haven't seen any persons in authority actually speaking about this or saying, whoops, you know, we need to do something.
Right, which is bigotry in its own way. And so, you know, we have to go to a break, Dorothy, but when we come back, you know, yeah. it would be interesting to talk in to discern just a bit without going too deep into it. I know we talked about Charlottesville quite a bit, but there's some discernment that can happen here. So I have a point to make when we come back from okay. this break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Amber Teal, founder of The Healthy Edge, is bringing you the hit show Healthy Edge Radio, living with power, passion, and purpose. Amber provides the support and tools necessary for you to finally release the weight and emotions that are hidden beneath the weight. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information on how you can take the next step with Amber, visit GetTheHealthyEdge.com.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Are you struggling in a relationship and deeply craving some tools and support to get things back on track? Do you crave having a loving, compassionate relationship with Mr. Right, but always seem to pick Mr. Wrong? Well, Sarah Luce can help. She's created a 4-week online course starting September 28th that will teach you how to shift your energy and behavior to have new transformative outcomes. And you're going to get a personal one-on-one session with Sarah to ensure you get powerful personal results. Sign up today at sarahluce.com.
Tune in each month to Synergenetic Living Radio, where Rick and Grace Paris discuss the synergenetic way of life, what it means to truly change your perspective in life, what it means to take control of your life and manifest your true desires. For more information on Rick and Grace Paris and Synergenetic Living, check out synergeneticliving.com. Get clear on the life you desire and the current life you are creating and what is between the two. Synergenetic Living, living life loud.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit ThriveByJen.com today.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. I'm going to get right into it because we have so much to cover, and this is such a fascinating subject. So, Dorothy, before the break, we were talking a bit about Charlottesville. And, you know, the theme of the month is discernment. And it takes really critical thinking, and it takes discernment to really get to the root cause of what was going on in Chicago. And when we see our president say, well, what's next? Are they going to take down monuments of George Washington? It gets a little ridiculous, but at the same time, people buy into that. They buy into this idea, and they without discerning what's behind this. You know, the whole point of that protest or rally in Charlottesville was to protest that these Confederate statues were coming down. And this idea that it is a part of American history and that it is celebrated as such leaves out what part of American history that these are really celebrating, because the majority of these monuments went up long after the Civil War. In fact, most of them went up during the time when the Jim Crow laws were enacted, that most of them went up after the turn of the century. And in the first 20 years afterwards, when there was a huge rise and a pushback because of Jim Crow laws and wanting to keep this like sort of a campaign of terror against the blacks, that when you put a statue, you know, of General Lee in front of a courthouse, well, when you walk into that courthouse, you know, can you be guaranteed equal rights, you know, or any rights whatsoever? You know, and then we saw that there was another kind of a huge uptake in these monuments going up after the Supreme Court ruled Brown versus the Board of Education and declared that Jim Crow laws were unconstitutional. All of a sudden, these monuments go up again. So when you basically say that this is a part of American history, yes, this is a part of American history. It's American history of systemic terror against blacks and limiting their, you know, ability to, you know, to have access to equal rights and government and be participants in you know, the American way. So.
Right. Well, and I think it's also important, Steve, to recognize that there are monuments to people who were trying to tear the United States apart. These were not patriots.
Well,
these
right.
were, right. And, but I think that that's critical because President Trump has raised the issue of, you know, early presidents being slave owners, but they had a vision of a country that they were trying to put together. There are lots of heroes from the Union Army and from all of the activities that happened afterwards that could go up instead if we wanted to really celebrate our history. So yes. I just wanted to slip that in.
Well, sure, and you know, Thomas Jefferson, he had a vision. He knew that it would take time, but he knew that eventually that this was wrong, and eventually it was something that could happen fast, and he actually saw it. He actually had an idea of how this would work in a peaceful way and just knew it would take time. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Yeah.
So discernment, you know, we're bombarded with this every day in the news, right? I mean, we've got to constantly discern what somebody's motives are, right? And
that's right.
And understand really what are the moral implications, you know, of certain decisions.
Yeah.
So yes, we should.
So I'm going to move us on to the next level, which is pity. And so this is where the attitude that's being expressed is that the person, whether it's LGBT or an ethnic group or a religious group, is just not as mature as the white male ideal. And so what you want is, you know, you feel sorry for the person. You don't want to put them in any position of responsibility because they're not mature enough yet to handle it. And so you have responses of, you know, well, I just don't want you to have such a hard life. That's another aspect of that pity or tolerance. It's a very patronizing perspective. It sounds like it might be positive, but it's actually very patronizing.
Yeah.
And doesn't recognize the strengths of the person.
at all. Yeah, it only sees them for their difficult future. And I think parents have come a long way, but I certainly in my day of the 80s and the 90s and coming out during the AIDS crisis, you know, there was just fret and worry. You know, were you going to be responsible? And that level of maturity, because it was necessary to just stay alive, you know. And this idea of the hardships and the hardships, you know, on and on, was not, in a sense, seeing you as their child any longer, but just this poor person that had such a rough road ahead of them, which didn't have to be the case whatsoever, you know. So a child coming out to their parents and the parents saying, instead of saying, I love you exactly who you are, you know, mm-hmm. you're my child, I love you. But for the first response mm-hmm. to be one of pity, right, is tough, you know, because right away,
yeah,
there you go. Oh, wow, my life is going to be really impossible. Why me? You know, when you start to pity yourself, yeah. right?
Yeah. Yeah, and then very closely related is the third level, which is tolerance, which is also related to this idea that you know, gays are not as mature, but it has with it, instead of that kind of pitying, you know, poor dear feeling, it's the, oh yeah, so you're just experimenting. And one of the brutal expressions of this particular level is the condoned raping of lesbians. Mm. We don't hear about it as much in North America, but it is rampant in South Africa. You'll even have a mother get a son, the brother or cousin of the woman, to rape her to try to make her heterosexual, as though that's the issue. So although tolerance is a pleasant, more pleasant sounding term, it has that underbelly also of, yeah, okay, if you don't grow out of it, there are negative consequences. Don't it ask, don't tell is an example
yeah,
of tolerance.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It makes me think of don't ask, don't tell. And I remember being so disappointed in President Clinton when that, you know, he told the gays, I'm going to be your president. And, you know, time after time, it was a bit disappointing, his response. And I remember really feeling and taking my time to not react to don't ask, don't tell. And then just realizing, well, if you can't tell, how are we even moving toward, you know, you are assuming that there is something wrong and that you cannot actually be yourself and be a part of the armed services. We just don't want to know mm-hmm. about it. You know, maybe mm-hmm. this will just go away, right?
It's like the three monkeys, right? With the paws over the eyes, the ears, the mouth.
Yeah,
that's the tolerance. The don't ask, don't tell.
Right, right.
And
go on.
It has an avoidance aspect that you were describing, where you are, yes, you're tolerant, but you're avoiding dealing with the actuality of the person in front of you and who
yes.
they are in their fullness.
It makes me think of Liberace. I don't know why, and I'm wondering whether it's pity or tolerance. But, you know, Liberace was so flamboyant. And, you know, you think of the era in which he was so popular. He was really out there, you know. And I remember being very young, asking my mom, you know, wow, this guy is, he's so gay, you know. And my mom looked at me like, Liberace? Gay? You know, and it was this idea that she just never even thought about this, you know, and maybe I was making assumptions, but to me, I just thought, well, and hooray, you know, he, in every sense of the word, he seems happy. He seems, you know, if you think of the way that word, the word gay, meaning to be carefree and happy and fun and mm-hmm. jovial. And it, to me, there was this sort of almost tolerance of him that, well, he's kind of like a kid, you know, it's that childlike thing. He just is, he's just flamboyant and he plays the piano. Let's focus on his music. Let's not look at him for too long because maybe, you know, maybe you're going to turn gay. And, you know, where would you say, would you say it's a bit of tolerance going on there?
Well, I would think that it's tolerance. Yeah. And that's a good example. If you think about what his actual personal life was like,
mm-hmm.
you know, was he really accepted for who he was? You know, it's there's an element of invisibility there.
Exactly. And the lengths that the powers that be went to keep his life as private as they could, right? It's a bit like don't ask, mm-hmm. don't tell. You know, only go so
right.
far. Only go so far. Mm-hmm. And you think of the households that sort of where he was just tolerated by, as you say, men who just had to endure looking at this effeminate man, you know, in sparkles and glitters and just enjoying himself and really challenging them. You know, okay, I will tolerate this as entertainment, but mm-hmm. not, you know, I will not go any further than that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That can be a very lonely road.
Yes.
You know, there's a certain energy that is required to be out there, to be, you know, in people's face, to be standing up for something. I mean, I've had experience of this. But then you go home, you know, and what's changed?
Yeah. And this idea of that you're just experimenting, you know, that it's I'm sort of waiting for you to become mm-hmm. you because this isn't you, obviously.
Right.
And people not
right.
Even understanding that to say something like that, even about another, to put that out there as a thought form, as or as a justification, or even as what would the word be, Dorothy? Just an explanation. Oh, they're just mm-hmm. experimenting. You know, and mm-hmm. they'll grow out of this. You know, it's very mm-hmm. damaging indeed. Well, mm-hmm. we've got to go to a break again. This conversation keeps going so fast, Dorothy. But when we come back, we'll talk about the next classification in the riddle scale. So listeners, we'll be back after these messages.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundation's retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature, or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Do you know how to achieve wellness in all areas of your life? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Signs of wellness are a capacity to love and ability to nurture, a sense of purpose, a good sense of humor and plenty of fun in your life, a concern for others and a respect for the environment, a conscious commitment to personal excellence, a sense of balance and integrated lifestyle, and capacity to cope with whatever life presents. Well, people enjoy their lives and want them to last as long as possible. That's why the wellness mindset usually accompanies other constructive, healthy lifestyle habits. By adopting a wellness mindset and behaviors like eating well, taking the right nutrition for the body, exercising, and saying affirmations are just a few things to structure a healthy system of values and beliefs. I will be your wellness coach to help you achieve a wellness lifestyle. Call us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Tune in to the Psychic Professor's Show, The Voices of Spirit Radio, with international medium and spirit artist Dr. Susan Barnes on Transformation Talk Radio. Featuring a variety of spiritual topics such as psychic art, spiritualism, EVP, psychic development, and mediumship, this hit call-in show provides listeners with breakthrough wisdom to enliven and enlighten their lives. Visit spiritartgallery.net.
Tune in each Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I are talking about the Riddle Scale. And Dorothy, you said earlier on in the show that we were going to talk about the four negatives first and then the four positives, seemingly, right? And what's interesting is this word acceptance. And it's interesting that that would be under a negative. So I'm sure we can discern why you would say that about this word acceptance.
Well, it's interesting because this is when I started working on this issue. This is actually the attitude that I most wanted to explore with people. It's called acceptance because it implies that there's something to accept. That there's something that you're not that people haven't understood what the context is. There's actually a turnaround because the way that people express this is they say things like, "You're not a lesbian to me. You're just a person, right? What you do in bed is your own business. What you do is fine with me as long as you don't flaunt it." These kinds of statements,
On the exterior, they're sort of showing you or telling you that they accept you or accept homosexuality. But within that statement, you realize that there is bias and it may be even unknown to them.
That's right. And this to me is the liberal attitude. And this is the most difficult one sometimes to get people to recognize in themselves because they think... I'm just a humanist, right? There's no issue. And yet there is an issue. You know, I've lost custody of a child because of my lifestyle. I've lost a job because of my lifestyle. I have friends who have been physically abused because of their lifestyle. I've had friends that were killed because of their lifestyle. This is not just a neutral, oh yes, everything's fine, we're all human together. So it's a recognition that there really is something going on, and trying to get under it is hard. I'd like to give an example just from my own family, if I may. I was visiting with my parents at the time when my brother called to say that he was getting married, and he was asking my father, who was an ordained minister, if he would perform the wedding ceremony. And my father was ecstatic. You know, I mean, he was just so pleased and happy that my brother was getting married. He was delighted he was going to be part of the ceremony. This was all just fantastic. And he is someone who had was really very, you would call him very liberal. You know, he was very accepting of people from many walks of life. In fact, got in trouble for that a bit, with some exceptions. And I said to him, you know, you're so excited that my brother is getting married, and you're going to go out and tell everyone. And if I told you that I was in a relationship and that I wanted you to perform a ceremony for me, not only would you not be happy, but you would hope that nobody heard about it. Now, this is before the days when gay marriage was legal. And he looked at me and he said, I can't help it.
Right.
And I said, well, yes, you can, you know, but what are you willing to do about it? And he said, okay. He said, give me books to read and I will try to have an open mind.
Right.
And he did. For the next year, he did do that. But he went through an initial period, which is also something that I've seen with this attitude, where although he never, ever told jokes about any other disadvantaged groups, he would tell queer jokes.
Interesting.
Which, to me, was an expression of his discomfort, right? He was really, because here he was this liberal person, so accepting, so, so kind of always on the correct side of a social issue, but not on this one. And so that to me is the whole issue around acceptance is that the person has, the challenge with it is that the person has created a mythology for themselves which does not allow them to actually work on the prejudice that's there.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's like, it's almost like there is a line drawn. It, you know, I think of separate drinking fountains for blacks and whites. Like, I will accept you to this point, but beyond that, I can't even comprehend. And you know, there are cultures, and I respect at least your dad said, I can't help it, meaning he realizes there are cultural biases that he just doesn't know what to do with. And you know, I would say that his soul really chose you as a daughter, right? Because he was going to grow. You know, you are the type of person that would say, well, Dad, here are books, here's the research, here's how to get to know about homosexuality from, you know, using a critical mind, right? Using a discerning mind.
Right. Well, and actually he and my mother together taught me to discern, because they always wanted me to look at how many different ways could an issue be looked at, you know, what could possibly be going on. But I think, and I'm not sure about this, Steve, but I think that President Trump's comment on many sides is an expression of this particular form of prejudice.
You're exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't think he said anything wrong.
Right.
Right. And what he's doing is completely ignoring the impact of that statement and the reality of the racism and xenophobia that he is supporting and allowing to ferment.
Right. And it almost makes me wonder, like, where appeasement is in all of this. Because he's appeasing people, you know. He's trying to, he wants acceptance himself. And so he's appeasing. But there is, you know, at acceptance, you have to start assuming responsibility, right? It seems that responsibility is coming into the picture here.
Yeah. Well, and this is, you know, we've talked before about the whole difference between Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter.
Yes.
And certainly on a spiritual level, all lives do matter. But the statement Black Lives Matter is a naming of a particular social dynamic that needs to be healed.
Yes.
And it's not the same as All Lives Matter.
And it is our responsibility to understand the implications and the implications of Black Lives Matter and the differences between the two, which is discernment, right, Dorothy? Dorothy,
that's
guess
right.
What? We're literally at the end of the show. This is has got to be the fastest show we've ever done. It went so fast. I feel like we just began 5 minutes ago. So, listeners, we're gonna continue this conversation into next week. And actually, I think we'll continue it as long as it needs to go because we're really learning so much about discernment and its importance. So, Dorothy, we're really right at the end of the show. So, we are going to have to continue this really intriguing and learned conversation into next week. Is that okay?
That's great.
And I think we'll even talk a bit more about acceptance. And I definitely want to tell our listeners the story of how we met and how All Lives Matter versus Black Lives Matter really helped me evolve and learn something wonderful about myself in the future for the discernment month. So listeners, thank you so much. And we appreciate your listenership and hope you're enjoying the show. And we will be back with more of it next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.